In each of our conversations this week about the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, we've talked with someone who reminds us that health and health care are not just something on the fringe of daily life. What we think of as health or experience of health care, these are some of the most important aspects of life itself. The life and death experiences of being in an intensive care unit, a doctor's impressions of years overseeing a huge urban hospital, and the real human beings he helped. And the ones in the end he couldn't. Today, a patient reminds us how lonely it can be to navigate through the experience of a debilitating condition, in this case, depression. Former advertising executive David Blistein is the author of David's Inferno, My Journey Through the Dark Wood of Depression. The book chronicles a struggle to understand himself, understand his doctors, and ultimately to understand what the whole notion of normal means.
Depression is a valid part of the human experience, and maybe we don't even need to call it depression. Maybe just like Dante, we all go through our dark woods, we all go through our limbos, we all go through our hells and our purgatories to try to find our way out. We all learn our lessons in paradise, and then we go back and do it again.
Dante was Blistein's companion through an experience that was neither divine nor a comedy, although there are many laughs in his book. An experience that began for him not in his head, but in his gut.
When my stomach started agitating in a way that they refer to as serotonin overload, and by 3 or 4 days later when I was on the floor and could barely talk, I knew that things weren't good.
And people think of depression as a mood, but you understood it to be a fundamental breakdown of your physiology on so many different kinds of levels. How do you transit from creative, manic kind of personality, oh, I'm a really interesting person, I'm very emotional, I'm feeling down, oh my goodness, I'm coming apart at the seams?
To me, it's really physical. I keep saying that sadness is in sort of the front of your head, but when you're depressed, it's a little more like grief, I guess, that people experience grief. You sort of experience it behind your throat and in your tear ducts, and it's sort of like this whole physical sensation that goes through you. And that's how I tell the difference. But I also have to mention that there are 300 different diagnoses that psychiatrists use, and there really should be 8 billion for all of us because it's so individual.
Does the healthcare system, as you encountered it, and the very important individuals who helped you along the way, do they have their act together on how to treat depression? We know a lot about how the brain works.
I think that they do the best they can with what they have. I think they're remarkably successful with what they have. And frankly, I think one of the issues with universal health care is one of the worst things that a depressive can do is go off of medication too quickly. And I think what happens to a lot of people is they change a job, their insurance goes, some of these are very expensive, and that can be really a recipe for disaster.
In many ways, you helped to bring on the crisis that begins this book by your own sort of self-medication, your own kind of I'll be my own doctor kind of thing.
Yes, I thought I knew what I was doing. I thought I was an informed patient. I'd gone off the meds that had worked for me for 5 years. I'd gone off for the summer. It had gone very well. My life was in a good place. And then as the fall came, I said, well, I'll go back on the way I went off, which is very slowly, which is how you're supposed to do it. And somehow, I have various theories, it didn't work that time. I just sort of cracked. The chemicals didn't interact with me well. And then I never got back in balance or for 2 years. That was what was surprising. I mean, I always thought I was going to be better anytime soon.
You know, the thing that is so interesting about this story is that, you know, it is so many of the great qualities about you also end up sabotaging you. And you can't determine what is it about me that's really smart and wonderful and sensitive, and what is it about me that's just self-destructive and hurting me? How did you sort that out, and what was your worst moment in looking in the mirror?
Well, the worst moments were really physical. I keep on going back to the physical because I remember I would bike a steep hill to get all this energy out of my system. We have lots of these steep hills in Vermont. And I'd get to the top and I'd start screaming. So you see, it was almost like a physical demon I had to expel. I didn't sense any contradiction with everything I knew. It's just everything I knew wasn't any help to deal with it.
And, you know, you made it through the advertising business. I mean, I try to imagine you in Mad Men. And what a terrifying place to be on the emotional edge.
Well, a little bit of mania is really good if you're creative. And yet, I think a lot of people who are creative deal with that sort of existential issue of, am I going to be able to find it this time? Am I going to be able to phrase it this time? Am I going to be able to come up with a new concept or the right question this time? There's always that little bit of doubt. So in that way, being a creative at an ad agency does lead to mood swings pretty easily.
How did people help you? How did they try to help you? And how did they fail?
Well, the first thing is to really recognize that this is a valid human experience. It doesn't have to be immediately fixed. You know, people feel guilty who are that way. They feel like no one understands. And really, the hardest thing is when people offer you advice because it makes you want to crawl into a hole. Wendy gave me a lot of space. My wife, Wendy, gave me a lot of space. And she also took care of herself, which I think is important. And, you know, I went on a long road trip, as you know, just as I called it, respite care for Wendy. As far as friends went, just acknowledging it. I have this great quote from Marilyn Monroe in the book that essentially says, sometimes it's enough just to be there. And I think that's the most helpful thing, and not to try to provide help, offer help, unless it's asked for. Other than that, just be there. I mean, it's the elephant in the living room. Everyone knows it's there, but it's not the only person in the living room.
And when you take us on this journey, what do you expect us to get by the end? Beware of depression notion, it's not so terrifying in here, because there are some great laughs in this book, I have to say, or thank God you're not Dante.
I really didn't want it to be a memoir. I don't think of it as a memoir. I think of the experience as giving me a point of reference to really explore depression from the diagnosis to the chemistry of it, all the way to how it affects your creativity, how it affects your relationships, how it affects your spirituality, even your life's process. So I think that's what I wanted to do. I also felt I had to do it. Having read William Styron's Darkness Visible, I realized, yes, you can actually describe, you can actually talk about this, you can actually share the experience. And I wanted to see as a writer how to do that. So between that and investigating all the aspects, I really want it to be sort of about every man, not just about me. And it's really gratifying when people have said to me, it's like reading my own autobiography.
David Blistein, author of David's Inferno, My Journey Through the Dark Wood of Depression. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you, John.